Hey, I'm Robbie Kramer. You're listening to the Leverage Podcast, where we discuss using your social skills to hack dating, travel, finding your dream job, and becoming a complete man.
So yeah, back to on. We've got the man, the mystery, the legend, the guapo, El Gustavo. Good to have you back on the podcast, man. And interview we did was great, so I'm excited to talk about more stuff. There's so much more to cover. I think we left off last time talking about how to get into clubs and bars and avoid paying the ridiculous prices that most people pay and avoid standing in the lines like most people do. And I wanted to ask you more about travel. You've been to how many countries? 89 or 90?
Yeah, I've been to 89 countries, so I'm expecting to visit at least one more just to complete 90 this month.
Very cool. Where are you going?
I haven't decided yet, actually. But probably one of the Soviet Union countries that I haven't visited.
Okay. Well, out of all the places, let's talk about women in different cultures, because I've experienced women in Asia, women in South America, women in Western Europe, Central Europe, Eastern Europe, all over the U.S., of course, Canada, Australia. Never been to Africa. Mm-hmm. Unless you count. Mm-hmm. No, you can't really count Israel. That's considered Asia. So yeah. So you know, let's talk about the different cultures and how they relate to one another, and what you found to be the best. I know you're from Argentina, so we've spoken about your how you feel about those girls. It's kind of how.
When we talk about different cultures, I think probably you would agree that when you travel around the world, this will open your mind to different kind of mindsets from people around the world. And I personally enjoy a lot traveling, especially by myself, because when you travel by yourself, you get the chance to speak to random people from new countries that you have never visited before, and get to understand how they think about life, how they see, relationships. And of course, there's many aspects of traveling and cultures, but, women is just one of these aspects. So do you want to discuss specifically women or cultures in general?
Well, in general is cool. I'm sure the listeners are interested in both.
Yeah, definitely. If it comes to, I don't know where you would want to start. I get asked this question very often, which is, what's your favorite country? And I get this question so often, it's crazy. So I thought someday I should actually write an article about it to answer this one question that everybody asks me. And the answer is not that simple. It's actually, it depends for what. So when they say, what's your favorite country? I will say, okay, you have to be more specific. What's your favorite country for what? For nightlife? For going to the beach, for going to the mountain, for business, what's the country with the most attractive men, what's the most attractive women, and all of these are completely different answers depending on the country. I'm right now in Russia, and I usually say that the big problem with Russia is they have so many beautiful women and a lot of ugly men, that's a big problem in Russia. I personally connect very well with Russians. And many of my friends already know this, but I always say that my future wife will be Russian one way or another. But when going back to cultures, and this is not specifically about women, but in general, I said, what's my favorite country for what? But for me personally, the most important when I'm traveling is the people. Because you can see the most beautiful architecture in a city. For sure, if you want architecture, go to Europe. That's my point of view. But at the end of the day, I think architecture is not the thing that will make you happy, or sites or touristy places. It's the people. So the people that you're surrounded by every day is the factor that makes you happy or unhappy, in my personal opinion.
I agree completely.
You can see the most
beautiful. I agree. I've been to so many countries that... I've been to so many countries that are... amazing sights, and wasn't a big fan of the people, and it really kind of ruined the experience a bit.
Absolutely, absolutely. And if you go for 2 days to a city, you will want to see whatever, the Eiffel Tower or the Empire State, but at the end of the day, the Empire State will not make you happy. It's just for 1 day. 2 or 3 days in New York, you will not pay attention to Empire State anymore, right? So at the end of the day, it's whether you like the people in that city or not. That's my point of view on it. And by the way, I think New York is the best city in the world, but that's just my personal opinion. And my second favorite city in the world is St. Petersburg, which is where I'm right now. But they're my favorites for completely different reasons. I believe that New York, and I could elaborate on this. We could have like three calls just about, you know, just about different cultures. But
for
me, New York is the best city in the world because it's, first of all, I think it's one of the, you know, counterintuitively, people think that New Yorkers are not friendly. I actually think New Yorkers are some of the most approachable people in the whole entire world. And I'm not talking about just women, just men or women. You can, you know, like the last, when I was living in New York since 2012 for a few years. And when I think about the last women that I dated in New York, I actually believe that Tinder is not even necessary or dating apps. Like the last girl that I dated in New York, I met her in the subway. The girl before that, I met her in Central Park. The girl before that, I met her in an ATM. You know, like how often do you go to an ATM and just start the girl next to you in the ATM, you know? And actually in New York, that's totally acceptable, I think. Like maybe in other countries, if you talk to a girl in an ATM, she thinks you're trying to mug her or something. But yeah, definitely I think New Yorkers are very, very approachable. I think the average IQ in New York is so high. Like the last time I, you know, one of the last times I was in New York, I remember as soon as I arrived, I checked into my apartment. And it was very late, and I didn't have time to, call my friends. So I said I will just go out by myself to a bar around the corner. So I just went, to a random bar around the corner in the West Village, and I walked in by myself. I got a beer, and I just talked to the first random guy that I met. And he happened to be a hedge fund manager. He was managing a fund with $100 million. Super smart finance guy, super friendly. We exchanged contact. I finished my beer, and then I talked to the next random girl in the bar. She was doing her postdoctorate in psychology. She spoke five languages, and she was researching how to improve the learning of a new language. Super smart girl. I finished my beer, and then I talked to a random guy, completely separate guy, and he was a German brain surgeon, and he was trying to cure brain cancer. And I thought to myself, you know, this is a random average people that you find in a random bar in the West Village in New York. It's not even like a special bar, just random dive bar. And I think the thing about New York is that it's so expensive to live there, that if you're not extremely successful at whatever it is that you're doing, the city is a filter. It will filter you out because nobody can afford to pay $3,000 for a crappy studio unless they're successful in whatever they're doing. Or at least they have a dream to be successful. You know, I think everybody in New York has a dream. You can go to the supermarket and talk to the cashier at the supermarket, and she doesn't want to be a cashier. Her dream is to be a dancer in Broadway, you know? So that's the energy that I love about New York, and I don't think any other city in the world has this energy of everybody pursuing a dream and everybody being super open to meet new people. Not even, you know, the big capitals in Europe, not even London. I used to think London was similar. Not at all.
Really? Yeah, because a lot of people say London and New York are similar in that way. I never thought so either. I'm not a very big fan of London. I love New York. I lived there for 4 or 5 years, but London, meh.
I've been to London like 6 times, and that's actually one of those examples. Like the very first time I was in London was my first time in Europe, and I was head over heels in love because my first impression was like the European architecture. Everything looks so beautiful. People look so elegant and so cultured. But then the more I started going back to London, and the more I started like seeing what the daily life looks like in London and how people behave, I just went by myself. I can go by myself to a bar in New York, and I will walk out of this bar with 10 new friends, and they will all be super cool people. If I go by myself to a bar in London, it will be really hard for me to make new friends because I get the impression that people in London, they go out to talk to their existing friends. They don't go out to meet new people. And that's a completely different mindset from New York, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't spent much time going out in London, but definitely I agree with you 100% in New York. You know, it's the easiest city to meet people ever. And as you said, the beauty of it is you can meet people out and about. You know, everyone's on the dating apps, but you're better off not using them.
Absolutely.
And I want to ask you more about, you know, just talking to random people and approaching and being social. But before I do that, you know, let's talk about like the average guy, or a guy listening who's, you know, who's kind of maybe kind of sick of the U.S. or sick of where he's at. You know, what made you want to get out of Argentina and travel and you know, kind of explore?
Oh, man. That's a good question. Well, I always had like this travel bug for all my life. I always wanted to see what the rest of the world was like. And I grew up like being not a rich kid at all. I had no money. I left my home with just $700 that I saved doing like little, you know, jobs here and there. And I had like no support from my family. So I basically just survived as you know, doing whatever I could to live by myself since I was a teenager. And at some point, I got into a relationship with an amazing person, an amazing woman. But after 4 years in the relationship, I realized that she was ready for a family and having children, and she's the doctor, so she had no expectation of like living abroad. She just wanted to, you know, settle down. And I always had this travel bug. I wanted to see the rest of the world. I don't want to, you know, have children right now and grow up to be this, you know, 50-year-old frustrated, you know, guy who's married and never had the chance to travel. So I ended up breaking up with her. And actually, I spoke a little bit about that on my prior call, but that's when I completely changed my body as well. I broke up. I went to live abroad, and I decided to change my, you know, my health, because I was very chubby back then. So I became in shape. And when I started traveling, it's like an addiction, you know. When you start traveling and you realize that you like it, you want to travel more and more and more. And here I am. I'm at 89 countries, and I still feel like I haven't seen anything, you know, in a way.
So I had the travel bug for a really long time. And for whatever reason, last year, or, you know, kind of the end of last year, beginning of this year, I feel like it's kind of gone away. Like, I still kind of want to, but I don't know. It's really decreased for me. So it's cool that you still have it though. I guess maybe my main motivation for traveling was like experiencing women in all different cultures. And I feel like I kind of have done that. So maybe I'm not as motivated.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
Not as motivated anymore. But so
yeah, I agree with you, and I at a point that, you know, I still have this desire to travel. But yeah, I agree that, you know, I already experienced. If it's just about women, I already experienced at least the women that I believe that I wanted to experience from different countries. But you know, I still like traveling. And occasionally, I do travel with, you know, with girlfriends or a girl that I'm dating, you know, from time to time. So I'm happy to do that as well.
So what would you say to the average guy, you know, maybe he's in Argentina, most likely he's in the US if he's listening to this, and he wants to travel, he wants to get out there, but, you know, it's like, he's got all his normal objections, I don't have the time, I don't have the money, I have this job, blah, 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 blah. Like, what would you say to a guy like that who wants to travel but feels like he's stuck and he can't?
Oh, man, like, if you're in the US and you, I mean, depends on what your situation is, but, you know, if you don't have the time or the money, at least just look up some super cheap flights to somewhere inside the US. You don't even have to go like super far. You can, you know, if you're in the East Coast, you can travel to the Caribbean for super cheap. Like, it's like, you know, just a couple hour flights or 3 or 4 hour flights. You can be, you know, in whatever, I don't know, Puerto Rico or Cuba, you know, or one of these different islands that are beautiful. And you can do a weekend getaway. You don't need to quit your job to travel, you know. I mean, if you can quit your job and you have the balls to do that, go for it. But, and I think that, you know, when I started traveling, I've been traveling for 3 years now, but initially I wanted to travel for 6 months. And then when I started, I couldn't stop. And it's been the best decision of my life. I had the best 3 years of my life, the last 3 years, for sure, because of travel. But you don't have to start big. You can just start with a weekend trip somewhere and just go by yourself somewhere, go on a little adventure, you know, talk to random people that you haven't talked to before. And that will, you know, expand your brain in a way.
Yeah. The coolest thing for me about traveling was, you know, when you're especially traveling alone, is you're forced to meet people, you know?
Absolutely.
Like when I first moved to New York, I mean, I knew my sister and a couple other random friends, but I really didn't, you know, I had no social circle. I didn't know anyone. And when I first got there, this was back in 2012, I was on JDate and Tinder and these stupid dating sites and like sitting in the apartment all day. And I was like, you know what? Fuck this. I'm just going to go out and meet people on the street. And it radically changed my experience. So, you know, when did you start doing that and becoming really social and going to bars and going out alone? Like, did you have any struggle with that at first, or has it always come kind of easy to you?
That's a good question about going out by yourself. I think, you know, I'm from Buenos Aires originally, and this is one of the biggest cities in the world. It's about 12 million people. It's roughly the size of New York, I would say. And probably, I think, the second or third largest city in Latin America. You have Mexico City, which is huge, probably the biggest city in the world. Then you have Sao Paulo, and then you have Buenos Aires. But Buenos Aires, despite being the same size of New York, is not the kind of place where you would go out by yourself, or you wouldn't even go out during the week. Like, all my friends in Buenos Aires on a Monday, and I said, hey, let's go out for drinks. They would say like, yeah, sure, but let's go out on Friday. Dude, it's like Monday. I have to work tomorrow. In New York, nobody ever says that. In New York, everybody says like, yeah, let's do it today. They don't care if it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. New York really never sleeps. So in a way, I think in Argentina, it's not really socially acceptable to go out by yourself. You can go to a bar by yourself, but then let's say you meet a girl and she's like, who are you with? And you would say, I'm by myself. And she will think you're awkward. Like, why would you come to a bar by yourself? But mm-hmm. I think you don't get any of that. So in a way, I think that living in New York completely changed my perspective on that because it's completely acceptable. And yeah, once you get into that habit of going out by yourself, I wouldn't say going out by myself. I would go out with my friends, but from time to time, I wouldn't have the time to call my friends. Or, you know, if it's a last second decision, they are not available, whatever. I just go out by myself. I just don't care about it. And oftentimes, it's the times that I end up meeting the coolest people.
Yeah, I agree 100%. And, you know, even it's totally in New York, you know, I've gone out before and, mm-hmm. and I've literally said like, hey, you know, I'm out by myself. Is it cool if, you know, I be your friend for the next 15 minutes? know, looking for a friend. And people are, they'll think it's funny and they'll be super receptive to that.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. Especially if you're traveling. I mean, if you're traveling, there's no question about that. When I go to a new city that I have never been to before, I usually go out by myself. I introduce myself to the people who work at the bar. I didn't used to do that before, but I realized that it's so useful. I introduce myself to the bouncer, to the bartenders, you know, to whoever works there. And usually I start a friendly chat. And the next time I will go there, everybody will know me by my name. They will make me skip the line. And even if you're going out by yourself, you don't feel like you're out by yourself because everybody at the bar already knows you. So usually after two or three times, you're like a regular, you know, and that's really cool.
Yeah. And the other thing, and I've said this before on other podcasts, and I'll say it again because I think it's so important. But if I'm in St. Petersburg, right, and I meet another mm-hmm. American, like the odds of that guy being cool are extremely high. You know, if I'm in Kazakhstan and I meet another American or just someone who speaks English, the odds of that person being cool are like 99%, right? Because the more like remote countries you go to and you meet English speakers,
absolutely,
it means that they're well-traveled, they're, you know, whatever, explorative, whatever the word is, you know, and I'm sure they have an interesting story. Otherwise, they wouldn't be there. So some of the coolest people I've met have been people on my travels because it filters for interesting people.
Absolutely, man. And here, I will give you an example for this very last weekend. I just arrived in St. Petersburg. I haven't been here in a long time. But I sent a message on Instagram to my favorite DJ in St. Petersburg. He's very popular. He has like, I don't know, like 50,000 followers or something like that. Or I know, several, dozens of thousand followers. And I sent him a message and I said, hey, I'm in St. Petersburg. And he said, oh, I just opened a new club in St. Petersburg and it's the coolest club. Come here, you will be my guest. So I just went straight to like the hottest club in St. Petersburg. I skipped the line. I got in. I got, you know, drinks for free. And it was like such a cool experience. And I walk in and I saw this super beautiful, tall girl. And I started talking to her. And the guy who was next to her, I was like, do you speak English? And he was like, yeah, I'm from New York. And I was like, what the fuck? Show me your driver's license. So he showed me, I took out my driver's license from New York and he took his. And we became immediate friends, you know, automatically.
Right.
So I talked to the guy, and it's exactly what you said about the chance of this guy being cool. He was like super cool, and he runs VC fund, venture capital fund. He invests in technology companies, and we became friends that night. He texted me, and literally, we are going to have a call tonight. After this call, I have a call with this venture capital guy from New York who manages this billion-dollar fund, and he wants my advice in which companies to invest because he had a few companies in his prospect that apparently are related to the experience that I have in tech. He didn't explain yet because we didn't have the call, but that's what he wants to do with me. And he's a super cool guy. Sometimes you all go out by yourself, you end up meeting the coolest people.
Yeah, because people's guards are down. You know, if you met that guy in New York, you probably wouldn't meet him because he probably has an entourage. Yeah. You know, if he's got a huge fund, he's out with all of his friends. He's not trying to meet new people.
Yeah.
But then if you're traveling, you know, they are trying to meet new people. So there's it's just so eye-opening for that reason. I mean, that's how I met. That's how I got my, like, Playboy connection, traveling in Ukraine, just meeting random guys, you know, getting introduced, friends of friends, because you immediately have that, like, oh, you speak English? You're from the U.S.? Cool. Like, you got to meet my friend who's here from the U.S. Like, that's all you need.
Absolutely. So if you're a guy, it doesn't matter if you're American or where in the world, if you have a chance, just get your passport. Just take a flight by yourself to somewhere, even if it's just for a weekend. You don't need to afford like a super big trip. Just go somewhere. If you can fly abroad, fly abroad. But if you can fly at least to one place that you have never been to before, it can be a city in your own country or a different state. if you're American, you know, you would be surprised how different cultures are in each state. You know, like New York is nothing alike with, you know, the south of the US or, you know, with the West Coast. So just explore your own country and just travel by yourself. It will open your mind so much.
Totally. Yeah, instead of going out for another stupid weekend with your college frat bros who are married and go to the same stupid bars, yeah, and, you know, you're hanging out as like the seventh wheel with your couple friends, hop a flight, go to Charleston, go to Raleigh, Durham, yeah, go somewhere in the South. There's tons, yeah, of beautiful women down there. The ratio is in your favor. It's the best place in the U.S.
I've never been to Charleston. Texas. I'm curious about it. Yeah, I will put it on my list.
Yeah, in the South, you know, it's the hidden gem of the U.S. But
interesting.
Yeah, and especially if you're trying to get out of your shell and be more social and approach more, when you get into a new city, you feel free to do that because you're never going to see those people again. You know, you don't have to worry about bumping into someone. It's like the ultimate way to push your comfort zone.
Absolutely. And that one thing that I always keep repeating this, like, rejection is much better than regret. And I talked about this last week when we had the call. And it's really funny because I will give you an example. Like, you know, especially when you're traveling, because if you get rejected, who cares? You will never see this person ever again. Chances are this person is not even from your culture. So you, as a tourist, you have a license to be inappropriate because you're a tourist. So you're not necessarily understanding the culture. So if you do something stupid, you know, it's acceptable for a tourist. So just go out there, approach people. If you get rejected, you know, you shouldn't give a fuck, really. Something I wanted to tell you about rejection and regret, you know, in the last week in St. Petersburg, and I don't know if this will be edited out of the call or not, but anyway, in the last week in St. Petersburg, I haven't been a week. I've been like 5 days. I already had two threesomes and I had like 45 girls already. But the one thing that I remember, and it's still bugging me, it's the one girl that I did not approach 1 week ago. Exactly last Wednesday. And I actually and I just told you about it. It was this most beautiful girl that I saw in the street. She looked at me. I looked at her. We walked past. And I was walking with another girl, who is it's one of the girls that I had a threesome with, but I thought it was not appropriate to talk to another girl when I was in front of her. But, you know, when I look back, she wouldn't have cared anyway. And I really wanted to talk to that girl. And it's so stupid because I had so many experiences in this week, but I still remember the one girl that I did not approach. So I've been kicking myself so badly about
it. And we discussed it. You could have just said, I thought I knew her. You know, you just run real fast.
Absolutely. You know, there's something in psychology called, I don't know how to pronounce it, Zeigarnik effect. Have you heard about it?
Doesn't sound familiar.
Well, Zeigarnik effect is an effect in psychology that shows that people tend to remember more uncompleted tasks than the completed tasks. So what sounds very simple, but what's the implication of this? There was a psychologist called Zeigarnik in 1920s. And one thing they realized is that when they were in a restaurant, they did a study of waiters and waitresses. And the waitresses, they usually remember more the orders that had not been paid yet. So the orders that were incomplete or they didn't get the check yet, they could recall by memory every single thing on the order. But if you ask them for what's the things in the order from something that has been paid already for 5 minutes ago, they couldn't recall exactly. So usually when something has been completed, it's not useful in our memory anymore and we tend to, you know, forget about it. So this effect looks very simple, but when you feel like something has not been completed, it's still in our mind. And it's used by, you know, by filmmakers when you're watching some series on TV and they usually end one episode with a cliffhanger. They do it on purpose because it's not complete and you want to see the next one, you know? But this translates even with, you know, with approaching women or with relationships. You feel like you didn't have closure. You're still in your brain, you know? So it's really funny because if you approach a girl and she says, no, I have a boyfriend, it's gone. I forget about this girl in 30 seconds. But if I didn't approach her or and I couldn't complete my approach, I feel like, what if? What if I had approached her? Who is this girl? Would I see her again?
You never still remember mind, the girls, you know, with the boyfriends, ever. But you remember the ones you don't approach,
yeah,
for
ever.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Or if I feel like I didn't do my part, like if I do my part and the girl rejects me, okay, it's not about me anymore. You know, I did what I had to do. But if I didn't do what I had to do, I just feel bad about myself and I just cannot get it out of my mind.
Right. Yeah, say more about that. So what do you feel like you need to do, you know, to give it your all?
In what situation?
Well, if you said, I feel like I did what I had to do, what does that mean exactly to you?
Well, if I'm seeing a girl in the street and she's looking at me and I'm looking at her and I just don't go and talk to her, like the very basic thing I could do is just approach her and say, hey, you know, I think you're super cute and I had to approach you and I had to ask you if you have a boyfriend or if you want to exchange contacts. If she says no and she doesn't want to exchange contacts, I mean, that's totally fine with me because it's her decision, but I did my part. But, you know, but this has also implications on, you know, on relationships. I actually had a really bad relationship last year with a girl that I was in love with. And I think it was so hard for me to have closure in that relationship because for a long time, I felt that it was like my fault that I was not doing enough for the relationship. And that's the reason that she didn't love me back or something like this. You know how I finally got kind of closure? I was like, you know what? She told me that I'm not doing this and this and this and this right for her. Like, for example, like I don't give her enough space and this and that and that. So I decided to do this. I said, I will be a 10 out of 10 boyfriend. I will be the perfect boyfriend for a month. I will give her my 100% dedication. If after this month it still doesn't work, I just know that I gave him my 100%. It's just not meant to be. So that's exactly what I did. I went for like, well, it was less than a month, but it was like a few weeks where I was like, I was being the perfect boyfriend. And even then it didn't work. And then I was, okay, listen, there's nothing more I can do. It's just, we're not meant for each other, you know? So in a way that's kind of like having closure or doing your part in whatever it is that you need to complete in life, you know?
Yeah. So basically it's like, as they say in sports, basketball, you know, you left it all on the court. You did everything, you know, you gave
absolutely
your best.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So maybe we can discuss this real fast because I think it's an interesting topic. And we went over it quite a bit in the workshop we did here in Kiev. And that's, you know, different styles of approaching people on the street, direct versus indirect. And I think both are super valuable and it's important to understand both. I have, you know, I think that my standard operating procedure is to be more direct, whereas I think yours is to be more indirect. And I think that works for both of us.
Yeah.
I think it'd be valuable to the, you know, to the listeners to kind of talk about why we do what we do. Maybe they all know what I do, but so tell us a little bit about your philosophy and just being social. Cause you talk to everyone, which is awesome. You know, that's the ideal way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. I really talk to everyone. And you know, usually for me, if we're talking about girls, approaching a girl and, first of all, by indirect, I mean just not saying, hello, you're beautiful, I want your number, which I'm still fine doing, by the way, depends on the situation. But if I have a chance to start a conversation with her about something different, I usually will do that because, first of all, if you see a girl from far away, maybe you think she's beautiful. The moment you're in front of her, she's not that beautiful. So first of all, I need to understand a little bit of who is this person, you know?
Right.
So for me, it's not hard to, especially if you're a tourist, it's so easy as a tourist to walk down the street, ask for directions, ask for recommendations, you know, like, I don't know, like I just arrived to the city. I need to buy a SIM card. Can you give me recommendations? And the girl will start building rapport with you. You will see what kind of person she is, if she's trying to help you, if she's being receptive. And once I have a little bit of conversation, I usually just end up asking for her contact. And I do mention that she's beautiful, but I usually I break the ice with something different than hello, you're beautiful, you know? And when I say indirect, I don't mean like being super indirect and just never getting to the point. I just mean breaking the ice with a different kind of conversation. That works for me. Like 90% of the girls that I meet them that way. Again, this doesn't mean just being on the friend zone and never telling her you're interested in her and never flirting with her. It just means breaking the ice with something different, which will give you a few minutes at least to understand who is this person and look her closely and see how she behaves, how she reacts to you, and then switch into flirting mode.
You've developed the ability to really read her body language and see how much she's kind of investing in the conversation. You can probably tell very quickly if she's interested or not.
Actually, sometimes I am so good at reading body language that it scares me because like I go into bars with friends of mine who are guys and I could tell which girl likes which of my friends before they even realize it themselves. And for me, it's so obvious and they don't even realize it.
Totally.
But very often girls will do things that, you know, the way they smile at someone, the way they touch their hair, the way they position themselves, you know, next to you or close to you, or touching distance, you know, you can definitely tell if a girl likes you or not just by the way she talks to you.
And did you always kind of have the ability to read that, or how did you improve your ability to read those skills?
That's a very good question. I think it's just trial and error, you know, like just paying attention, talking to people, see what kind of feedback you have. And that's why also I communicate better with like more open cultures, like, you know, like Southern Europeans are way more open about their feelings. The more north you go in Europe, and we discussed this before, people are way more closed about their feelings. It's hard to read them because they're just nice people, but they're nice whether they hate you or they love you, they're still nice. And it's so hard to read what's behind that. But, you know, at least here in Russia, if somebody doesn't like you, they will say, fuck you, go away. And if they love you, they will just hug you and they tell you they love you and they have no filter. So for me, it's so easy here. I always know where I'm standing here, at least in Russia. It's so easy to know where I'm standing. Absolutely. There's no bullshit.
How do you feel about Ukraine? Do you feel it's a, well, we talked about this. I don't want to beat a dead horse, actually.
Yeah, so we're talking about.
We'll skip that one. But when you say Northern Europe, are you talking more about the Scandinavian countries? You're not including Russia in that,
yes.
Right? Okay.
Yeah, no, I'm not including Russia. I include Russia in Eastern Europe, not in Northern Europe. Northern Europe, I mean, from anything from Germany to the north, like Germany, Netherlands, Norway, Sweden. The more north you go, in my opinion, people get more reserved and more cold. Iceland, I've been to all of these countries. And the more north I go, the harder it is for me to get a deep connection. Like if I go to, I don't know, Norway, and I ask someone, hey, how are you? They will say, I'm good. If I come to Russia and I ask someone, hey, how are you? They will say, oh, today I had a fight with my girlfriend. I had this problem with my parents and this and this and that. And within 1 hour, they will tell me everything about their life. So it's just so easy for me to understand who I'm talking to here, you know?
Yeah.
They're way more open.
Would you say, how would you compare Northern Europe to the U.S.?
I think Americans smile, and for me, it's actually way easier to connect to Americans. I think part of the reason is because I lived in New York for so long that I got used to being around Americans. So I kind of like, I already learned to understand how they think, you know? So I never lived in Norway. So maybe I'm doing an unfair comparison. But I met a lot of, let's say, Norwegians and Swedish girls. And these are some of the most beautiful girls I've seen in my life to look at from a distance. But for me personally, it's really hard to build a deep connection with them. Like really, really hard.
I can meet a Norwegian. Too. And it's funny, you know, I haven't spent much time in those countries. Just never, you know, I spent a little bit of time there, but after coming to Eastern Europe, I was like, what's the point? Because I enjoy the women over here so much more. But they do say that the women in those cultures are the most open to like one night stands. So they'll have sex with you, they say, especially in Iceland. But then that doesn't really correlate
not
with
your experience.
The connection. Not my experience. I mean, I haven't spent enough time.
No, but man, I agree with you. Like when you see statistics, the statistics show that Scandinavians are the ones who lose their virginity the earliest. So I think like on average, like let's say women around the world, like on the average is 16 or 17 or even like 20, depending on the country. You know, the more conservative the country they are, like women tend to wait longer to lose their virginity. And Scandinavia is the youngest region of the world where women lose their virginity the earliest. I think it's like 13 or 14. That being said, and also it statistically shows they're the most willing to have one night stand. But when I was there, I just couldn't connect to people. So I don't even get to anything. And it just surprises me because it's completely opposite. What I read on the statistic is completely opposite from my experience. And it's not that it's opposite from my experience, more like the way they do it is not the way that I enjoy doing it. So, and if somebody from Sweden is listening to this, they will hate me probably, but I actually had this conversation with Swedish people before, but. So the way flirting works in Latin America is like this. If you meet a girl in Latin America, you ask her out on a date, you go out, you hold hands, at some point you kiss her, and eventually you have sex. That's the usual procedure. The way it works in Scandinavia is these people are way colder. So the way they do it is they go out on a weekend, they get completely drunk, they get wasted. The next day when they are wasted, they end up waking up with someone in the bed. and then they have sex, and then the next day they pretend they don't know each other, so they don't communicate. There's no flirting or anything like that. And then after 1 week, they get drunk again, they have sex again, and then they don't communicate for another week. And eventually, if this happens 2 or 3 times, they will say, hey, we should go out on a date, right? So they go out on a date, and eventually they kiss, and eventually when the relationship is like super serious, then they hold hands in public. So it's completely the opposite procedure from Latin America. So for me, it's so hard to operate that way. You know, I'm Latin American. I'm a very flirtatious guy. I have flirting in my blood. So I cannot even have sex without flirting. It's in me, you know?
Right. I'm more similar to you. In that sense.
Yeah. So these people don't flirt at all. They just get drunk and they just fuck you. And then the next day they just don't even call you back, the girls. It's crazy. Yeah. It's crazy.
That's definitely a strange way of operating. I mean, the only thing I know for sure about Swedish girls and my friends is all the black guys I know fucking go there and they have the time of their lives. and every Swedish girl I've met that goes to LA, same sort of deal. Like, if you're a brother listening to this, go to Sweden. They love I guess there's opposites attract over there.
Like some kind of fetish. I remember this one time I was in London in a club called Zoo, and I walked in and every single super blonde girl was with a black guy. Like I remember seeing 5 or 6 blonde girls. They were all over the black guys. I don't know why, but there's a kind of like fetish with that.
Yeah, something's going on with that for sure. But
definitely.
So of all, you know, obviously your favorite is, you know, you're like me, you like Slavic women, Russians, Eastern Europeans, obviously. What about Brazilians or Colombians? Because those are closer to your culture, obviously, but, you know, because there's a lot of similarities, you could say, but I don't think I've ever asked you, what's your stance on the girls from South America that aren't Argentinians?
So I will answer your question. First of all, Brazil is one of the friendliest countries I've seen in my whole life. You can literally talk to anybody in the street in Brazil and they will be your friend like instantly. Like, I have a top four of countries, of friendliest countries in the world. And the top four for me was, number one was Serbia. Like, it's just ridiculous. The amount of friendliness from complete strangers that I experienced in Serbia it just blew my mind. And the amount of random acts of kindness from people that I don't even know blew my mind. Serbia was number one. Then I had Colombia. Colombian people also. You will just ask for directions in the street, and then they will treat you like you're part of their family, and they know you for 5 minutes. It's just crazy. They will take you home. Their mom will cook for you. Then Brazil is the other one. I absolutely love Rio. In Rio, anything goes. And it's funny because they're so close to Argentina, but I feel like Brazilian people are 10 times more friendly than Argentina. Also, it's 10 times more chaos. Like, it's weird because you fly from Argentina to Brazil and you would think they're similar, but they're not. Like, Brazil seems so underdeveloped compared to Argentina. And Argentina is already an underdeveloped country, by the way. But still, Brazil seems way more underdeveloped, way more unsafe. It's way more dangerous. But people are 10 times more friendly. So I love Brazil. I mean, just because the people are so friendly. And the other one is South Africa. Like, I absolutely love South Africa. And it kind of reminds me a little bit of Brazil, and Europe is a mixture. They used to be a Dutch colony, so they have all these like blonde people, but in Africa, and they have like this, European genes, but they go to the beach every day and everybody has like a beach body. So people are so damn good looking in South Africa, especially in Cape Town. I love the city. So I definitely recommend you to visit Cape Town at some point.
Yeah, that's kind of the big place on my list. You know, I haven't been, and I'd like to go there next, I think.
Yeah.
You know, one more thing I want to talk about traveling is a lot of people are afraid to go to Eastern Europe because they think it's dangerous. I feel safer here than I do anywhere else in the world. I don't know if you've experienced that in Russia or Ukraine. I never feel any sort of danger walking through parks at 4 or 5 in the morning. Like, it's, man. Yeah.
I remember being in Moscow and I went out for a run like super late in a park. Like, it was like 2 in the morning, pitch dark. It wasn't even summer. It was pitch dark, 2 in the morning. I remember like I saw this girl walking by herself in the middle of the park with a super short miniskirt and high heels. And she was just walking around like nothing. And I thought to myself, if this girl was walking like this, and she was a beautiful girl, if this girl was walking like this in Argentina in a park at 2 a.m., she would either get raped or at least she would be worried that somebody would rape her. Like, but here, there's absolutely no problem. I never met anyone who didn't feel safe here.
Yeah, it's and it's the perception is so backwards. Like when I first came to Ukraine a few years ago, everyone's like, "Oh, isn't it dangerous? There's a war there." Blah 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 blah. Like, you know, there's crazy, you know, Eastern European, like, you know, these crazy mobster guys. Like,
I never got either mugged or I have never seen anybody get mugged. Well, actually, I did get pickpocketed twice here, but not like violent crime that they would just. They will distract you and they will just take something from your pocket. Right. This happened for me the first time in the World Cup because they were trying to get all this, you know, from tourists.
They were probably professionals from Spain.
Yeah. That's yes. Like that being said, they were not even Russians. They were like a little bit more brown and they spoke like broken Russian. So I think they're more like, you know, one of those like ex-Soviet Union countries and they just come here and they operate in that way. But honestly, that's not even that frequent.
Yeah, they were definitely rare for the World Cup to, you know, they were there on business, you could say.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy. I don't even see bar fights here. Like, I've never seen a bar fight in Ukraine. I've seen a gazillion in the U.S.
you know, I haven't. Now that you mentioned that, I haven't. Yeah.
Yeah. So. No, but yeah, I'm trying to think. Is there anything else, you know, to discuss when it comes to travel? And, you know, the main thing is just, as you said, just. People just need to do it. Like, you'll always have excuses to not do it or wait for the right time or this, that, or the other. But once you do it, that's what I was going to ask you is, you know, just ways to do it cheaply. And, you know, both you and I know some like real advanced hacks, and it'd be cool to talk about that too, like getting buddy passes where you could fly unlimited. Do you mind talking about how you were able to get your travel companion pass?
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, so I have one of my very best friends. She's an American girl and I love her to death. She's one of the coolest people I know. And she's a flight attendant and we've been friends for like 5 years now. And, you know, flight attendants, they fly for free usually, not for free, but they only pay the taxes, which is usually 10% of the price of the flight. And they also have a benefit of choosing somebody else to put in their list. So they can fly also almost for free. They usually will choose their boyfriends or their husbands or, you know, family. And I am not her boyfriend. I'm not her husband. I'm not her family, but she chose me. So I am super grateful with her for that because she's a really cool friend. But after flying so much, I got to a point that I have so many friends in airlines right now, just because whenever I go on a flight, I ask for, you know, the people's names, the flight attendants, I become friends with everybody. You know, I sometimes even been out with the crew. Like I just land in a new city and I ask the people in the flight, hey, where are you doing tonight? And they say, oh, we have a layover tonight and we're going out. Do you want to come out with us? So, you know, it never hurts to become friends with people from airline at all.
For sure. They're fun to party with too.
That being
they love to get drunk.
Yeah. And my friend from United Airlines in the US, she's the friend that I just mentioned, she eventually did get a boyfriend. So now she has a boyfriend and she put her boyfriend on the list. So unfortunately, I lost my pass. But then I have another friend from Latin America, from Argentina Airlines, Aerolíneas Argentinas in Spanish. And so now I'm flying as a companion to him. So yeah, I switched passes basically.
Great. Yeah. And I used to have a United one that I got from a friend as well. And, you know, there's black markets where you could buy these things on. Obviously, you can get it from a friend. You know, I think the airlines don't want the people to sell them, but obviously people do. So, you know, and it ends up costing, you know, the great thing about these companion buddy passes is you get you can fly first class or business class and all you pay is the taxes. Typically you pay like a large upfront fee to get the pass from, you know, who's ever hooking you up with it. But then you end up spending, what is it, you know, $5,000-$6,000 for the year. And it's all you can fly first class or business class. You're flying standby, but the beauty of these international flights is they're never full. Like every single time I try to fly internationally, I almost always got business class. Flying domestically in the US, that was rough because most of the time I didn't even get on the flight. But if you're planning on doing a lot of international travel, it's amazing. If you have a big US carrier, for example, or maybe some of the big European
carriers. Yeah, that depends. Yeah, it depends a lot on the airline that you're flying. So, but yeah, in the US, most of the the airlines, they do free upgrades to customers in domestic flights. That's why you would never get an empty seat on a business class flight domestic. But in international flights, they never do free upgrades. That's why they tend to have empty seats in business class, more so than in economy.
Got it. That makes sense. Very cool. Any other travel tips or hacks? I mean, I think we talked about credit cards.
Yeah.
Those are great.
There are a million, of course. Like, I got so many, you know, business class flights with miles, you know. It's funny, but usually when you fly with points and miles, the best value you can get is on business or first class tickets. Because usually, usually a business or a first class flight can be, you know, 3, 4, 5 times more expensive than an economy class to pay in cash. But when it comes to points, it's usually 2 times more expensive. So the value, the cent value that you get per mile is usually much higher when you're redeeming for business or for first.
Yeah, for sure. It's that's the best way to do it for if you want to fly business for cheap. And a lot of these times you can get, you know, if you sign up at the right time for some of these credit cards, like the Chase Sapphire Reserve, when I signed up, they were offering a $100,000 bonus. And that was enough to get you like a round trip business class ticket to Europe, depending on if you bought the flight at the right time.
Yeah.
Just for
100,000 points. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a site called The Points Guy, which I always tell everyone.
Yeah, about. There are many blogs for this. The Points Guy, there's one Boarding Gate or something like that. If you just go to Google and put like travel blogs, there's so many of them, and they teach you how to, you know, maximize the value of this point. And it's definitely a really good tool if you are planning to travel a lot.
Are there any special websites that you like to use, like Skiplagged or Hopper or anything like that?
I definitely follow The Points Guy. And then, like sometimes if I'm looking for a special redemption, I would literally just like Google that redemption and say, best redemptions for whatever, American Airlines or United Airlines or whatever it is that I'm having miles on, or, you know, the Chase points. And when you Google that, you will get all these blogs depending on what kind of points you already have, you know? But some of the best, you know, flights I had in my life were with miles. Like, I remember probably one of the best flights I had in my life was from New York to Hong Kong, first class Cathay Pacific. It's one of the best first class in the world. One of the few airlines that still has a free class configuration, because most of them, they're switching to just business and economy, but they still have these free classes. And the price of that round trip ticket was like $20,000 when I Googled it. And I paid for that with my miles. And it was, of course, way less than that.
Wow.
And that's like, the service is absolutely, it was 16 hours. You know, usually when you're 16 hours in an airplane, you want the flight to finally end. But I was like, please make it longer because I'm having such a good time here. You know, it was amazing. Yeah. It was really, really awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I met a crew of Cathay Pacific people when I was out in Hong Kong, and they all really good looking girls, really good looking guys. I think they're doing it right over at that airline for sure.
Absolutely. I was flying from New York to Hong Kong over Christmas. So it was, the flight was almost empty, and like the service is so amazing. I had like two flight attendants just for myself, you know. And they bring you little paper notes and they say, oh, Mr. Gustavo, we want to wish you, you know, a Merry Christmas, like paper notes. And then they bring you like special gifts and they make the bed for you. And you have like this huge compartment where you can, you have even two seats. You can even have somebody sitting in front of you if you want to have a conversation, but the seat is just for you. But it's so big that you can fit two people there, you know?
Wow.
So it's really, really cool. And they have this menu that you can order. Usually, you know, in most flights, you have to eat, you know, lunch or dinner at a certain time, but then they have a menu in first class and you can order anything from the menu anytime you want. So I can just be waking up, you know, 6 hours into the flight and say, please bring me a steak, you know, and they will cook it for you.
Damn, I get really fat if I flew that airline a lot, especially first class.
Yeah.
Well, super cool stuff, man. Let's open it up to the guys on the call for questions. Before we do that, real fast, if you want to plug your Instagram again, or what, if you, you know, anything you want to promote.
It's Gustavo11, but Gustavo with a Z. My real name is with an S, but I just didn't have, you know, the chance to find this username. So it was G-U-Z, as in zebra, C as in Tom, A, V as in Victor, O as in Oscar, 1-1. Gustavo, 11.
Cool, man. Well, let's see. We've got Mark on the line, Key. Looks like a couple other people listening in, some other people there. So who has questions for general stuff or anything specific for Gustavo? I know Mark had some stuff he wanted to discuss earlier as well, so feel free.
Yeah, I have a question for Gustavo. You talked about like getting to know the airline staff, right? How do you, like, it seems like they're usually scrambling all over the place. So I'm just wondering how you manage to, get the time, have them spend the time with you to start shooting the shit or whatever you do. Like, how does that happen?
Well, usually in flight, you can just ask for their names and remember their names. A lot of people don't even remember their names, but just call them by their names and say, hey, whatever, Jessica or Kathy or Mark or whoever this person is, call them by name, greet them. And whenever you're about to leave the flight, say, hey, I want to say you had a great service and you're really cool. So I would like to keep in touch because I'm a frequent flyer, and ask for the contact. Don't be scared. The worst they can do is say no.
Simple enough.
Getting people's names is so, I don't want to say important, but it's such a hack. It creates such a connection, because imagine you're serving 300 people over the course of 5 hours, and most of those people are treating you just like they're not even, and they're not rude. Most people aren't rude, right? But there's zero connection there at all, right? So it's got to be really refreshing when someone takes the time to try to create some sort of connection where everyone else is just like, yeah, give me my drink, do this, do that, right? They kind of treat you as like a slave in a sense. Not in a rude way, but I'm sure that's very refreshing for them.
Definitely. I usually try to also, if you can, just give people compliments, we actually had a discussion about this with Robbie last time. I like giving women compliments, and guys as well. If you like a guy's watch, saying, oh, that's a really cool watch, and I mean, where do you buy it or something like that, it's very good to break conversation, to break the ice with that, And usually when you give people a compliment, they would love to talk about themselves and how they got this watch or whatever shirt they're wearing. Or if it's a girl, just, I say things like, I really like the way you wear your eyeliner or something like that. And they will remember you just because you give her a compliment. And I don't mean flattery. I don't mean like a fake compliment. I usually, when I say it, I mean it. I also, for me, it's very important to be genuine, But many of us, sometimes you feel, oh, I like the way this girl is wearing her eyeliner, but you would never say anything, So just say it.
Yeah, for sure. Another one, if you don't really know what to compliment her on, but you just like her overall style, you could even say that. I like your style. You look cool. How you put all this stuff together. I don't know much about fashion. You could even say, I don't know much about fashion, but you look really fashionable. And she'll appreciate that.
Yeah.
Because she probably did take the time to put something together.
Sometimes I would say something as simple as like, oh, I really like your smile. And just somebody will be happy because I mentioned that,
Sure. It's rare for people to get compliments. I mean, think about how many times you've gotten a random compliment from people, like during the last year. Yeah. I can probably count them on one hand. Yeah. maybe zero.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely, yeah. Especially when people are working, and they are just, like you said, people who are there to get their service, they don't really care about the employees. They just care about getting the service, So when you go out of your way and just remember their names and give them a compliment, they will remember you.
Definitely. Let me unmute these guys again.
I'm just remembering I had a flight in British Airways that I also got in with Miles, by the way. And I started talking to this gay flight attendant, and we started talking. I don't remember even what we connect about, but he started talking to me about his flights to Africa, and he showed me some videos with him with lions, and then we became friends, and then we exchanged contacts, and he said, oh, whenever you come to Barcelona, you can stay in my house because he lives in Barcelona. So I actually went to Barcelona, and I stayed in his apartment for a whole week, and he didn't even let me pay for anything. And this is just a flight attendant that I met in the airplane,
Amazing.
Yeah. And he already had somebody on his list, but otherwise he would have put me in his list, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, the buddy pass thing is amazing. And obviously just, having a lot of friends all around the world just makes it so much easier to travel. Like I have friends in almost every country that I'd like to go to. And of course, they're going to let me crash on their couch or they're at least going to offer, or they're going to introduce me to their friends. Traveling for a guy who's if you're single and you can do it, figure out a way to do it, because you'll regret it later if you don't. I think You can travel for cheaper and live for cheaper than you can in most cities in the US and Western Europe. Like, Mark, I know you're in Bangkok right now. I'm curious. You're probably spending way less money there than you would in Orlando, where you're from, right?
I'm spending less money.
But living better.
Bangkok's gotten a lot more expensive, so I can't say I'm spending way less money than in Orlando. But if I were in Chiang Mai, yes, it's definitely.
But obviously, the experience is probably a lot better being in Bangkok than fucking Orlando with, you know, Disney World.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Do you live there or just on vacation?
Like in Thailand, I consider Bangkok to be like the New York City of Thailand, and Chiang Mai to be like the Austin of Thailand.
Yeah. Do you live there or you're for a vacation?
I'm a digital nomad, so I'm here for as long as it makes sense to work here. But
why don't you try Phuket or the islands like Phi Phi Island or, you know, Koh Phi Phi, Koh Lipe, Koh Phangan?
Oh, I started off in Phuket and Patong and but I guess to answer your question, to answer your question would lead to a question I have for you. I don't want to travel to too many places too quickly because I've got work for my client, right? And if I travel too much, that's time spent away from work and you slip
into the schedule.
Yeah. And it's not even just the travel time, right? It's like getting settled in.
Absolutely.
And I'm still trying to learn that. So my question to you is how long you stay in your different locations and like what's your pattern or procedure or whatever for settling in more quickly?
That's a really good question. And I completely agree with you. Like usually, you know, the whole thing of like checking in, checking out, finding a place to stay, it's just a hassle. You know, it's like usually for me, the day that I'm arriving into a place, it's wasted because I'm settling in. The day that I'm leaving a place is also wasted because I'm packing, you know, and then all the in between of like finding a place, the logistics, et cetera, et cetera. So as a rule of thumb, when I'm traveling, even if I'm traveling just for fun and not for work, I have a rule of minimum 4 nights in one place. That's just me personally. But now the more I travel, the more I became a slow traveler. So right now I'm in St. Petersburg. It's one of my favorite cities in the world. And I'm planning to stay here for the very least a month. For the reasons that you just said, you know? Now I'm trying to do at least a couple of weeks or a month when I go somewhere.
Yeah, I think that's ideal too. Cause I've done the bounce around thing and it just doesn't give you enough time. You don't feel like you really saw what you wanted to see. You don't really feel like you connected with the people enough. You know, you go to a city for a weekend. Yeah. Cool. Right. You went, you did the normal things, you check off like the tourist traps, but I really like to integrate with the culture more and get to know people and find the you know, the cool things off the beaten path. I don't want to do what all the tourists do. I want to do what the locals do.
Yeah, and I usually fly also with one-way tickets. That's another thing about me. I never take two-way tickets because I initially fly one way. I rent a place for maybe the first 3 or 4 nights just to fill out the place. Even so, if it's a completely crappy city that I've never been to and it happens to be that I hate it, okay, I'm free to go away after 3 or 4 days. But if I happen to love it, like I remember the first time I went to Serbia, I only booked the first 3 nights and I ended up staying 3 weeks, you know, because I loved it. So I like having that flexibility of buying only one way tickets and then figuring out later what you want to do.
Yeah. Especially if you are a digital nomad, like I only buy one way tickets, because I know I'm going to change my plans. I might meet some girl and want to stay or bring her along with me. And, you know,
absolutely.
I made the mistake of buying too many round trips and missing my returning flight.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. The only cases in which I buy round trips, which is rare, is occasionally because of the way airlines work. Sometimes the round trips are cheaper than one way tickets. Not so much in Europe because you have all these low cost airlines, but in Latin America, for example, I went from Argentina to Brazil and it was, I don't know, let's say $400 to buy a one-way ticket and $300 to buy a round trip, which makes no sense, but sometimes it happens. So just for price reasons, I occasionally check it out.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, sometimes it's the same. And yeah, you might as well, like you said.
Cool, yeah, cool. And sometimes, you know, the way ticketing works with airlines, it's really funny, you know. Have you heard about this? I think it's called the ghost destination ticket. Ghost city ticket. Have you heard about this before?
No. What is that?
So let's say you want to go from New York to San Francisco. Let's say New York to San Francisco. Or you want to go from New York to Austin, let's say. And you find like a ticket from New York to Austin is $400. But a ticket from New York to San Francisco with a layover in Austin is cheaper than buying only to Austin. So sometimes a direct flight is more expensive just for the sake of being a direct flight than a flight with a connection. So there's this case in United Airlines that became popular, like I think last year. There was this guy who found this travel hack, and he was always buying, let's say, a ticket with a, he wanted to go, let's say, from New York to Austin, but he bought a ticket to San Francisco with a stop in Austin, and he would just get off the airplane in Austin.
Right.
So he did so many of these tickets, and then United Airlines sued him because he was doing a travel hack, and he said, I didn't do anything wrong. I just bought a ticket. I'm just not using a part of it, you know?
Yeah.
There this whole discussion happened where saying whether it's fair for a customer to do this or if he's taking advantage of the airline. And it was like a huge thing last year. I remember seeing that on the travel blog.
Is that the same as skip lagged?
Skip what?
Skip lagged. Have you heard of that? I think that's the same thing.
No, I haven't heard of that.
Yeah.
It could be the same thing.
Yeah. That's basically, it's a website that actually, I think the ruling came down where they ruled with the guy, and they're like, yeah, I mean, he's not doing anything wrong. Like, and then there's a website that allows you to search for those fares. The only thing is you can't check the bag, obviously, because it'll end up in the destination that you're not going to.
Oh, no, actually, no, that's not true, because there's a law in the U.S. because of terrorist attacks.
Yeah.
They can never take a bag if you're not in the flight with the bag. So if you decide to get off the airplane, they have to take out your bag, basically.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes it easy.
So, yeah. Because, you know, one time I had the same situation. I had a flight to Europe. I think it was a stop. I had a flight to Amsterdam with a stop in Madrid or something like that. And I changed my mind when I was on the way. And I said, I want to get off in Madrid. And they said, no, you can't because your bag is already on the way to Amsterdam. And I said, no, you cannot take my bag without me because there's a law that says this. And they checked the rules and they realized I was right. So they just took it out.
Nice. Did a dip through it and find it, right?
Yeah. But actually, if you think about it, it makes sense, because otherwise I would just check a bag and then I would just not show up and then I put a bomb there, you know?
Yeah, fuck. Yeah. I'm sure that's a rule, an international rule too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Fuck. Learn something new every day. It's a good one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sure, I'm scribbling away here. Thanks.
Any other questions?
Hi, I do have a question.
Yeah.
Shoot, Keith.
Yeah. Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Is it okay?
Go for
it. So, Gustavo, you're like super social. And I've been using like the method of like remember names, and I have some good success. I've been like, people like me more, and I just become more social, and I'm trying to like go more, and I'm trying to, find myself in do a part time at a local bar and try to like, as a way to meet more people. What do you think about this idea?
Just say getting a job in a bar. Did I get you properly?
Yeah, like a part-time job on the weekend.
Yeah,
at a local bar.
You know what? Like usually bartenders, they get to meet so many people. Like, what job would you do?
Maybe the waiter or the bartender.
I mean, try it. Do you need the money, or it's just for the experience?
For the experience.
I mean, try it out. You have nothing to lose. Worst case scenario, you know, after a couple of weeks, you can just go away, right? I mean, it's not that big of a commitment that, you know, if you quit, they will hate you. Why not?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
That being said, I mean, honestly, it's not really necessary. If you just hang out there as a customer, you can as well meet people.
Because I feel like I'm not super social. Like, I can sometimes like make friends, but I'm not. Like, I cannot, like, make friends with everyone. So I'm trying, like, maybe...
What city are you in?
I'm in Hong Kong.
Just walk... I mean, honestly, if it's just for the sake of making friends, I wouldn't get a job just for making friends. I think that's a little bit of like an overkill. Just walk into the bar and you know, get a drink and just talk to the person next to you. And sometimes, you know, the most obvious things just work for breaking the ice. You know, like you can just ask them, hey, what are you drinking? Is that a margarita you have there or is it a mojito? Just try to guess what drink they have, you know, something very, very basic, like, or stating the obvious, like, you know, I like the shirt you have, whatever. It's just, you know, icebreaker. And usually people go to bars because they want to meet people. So it's usually not awkward to say that to people in bars and you know, then just ask them their names, introduce yourself. And then before you know, you're having a conversation.
Okay. So take risks to break the ice with people.
Absolutely. And if they don't want to talk to you, you know, it's whatever. It's their problem. Like, there are so many people in a bar. You don't need to talk to just them, you know.
And you're like really good at reading body languages. And I feel like I'm not good at it. But it shouldn't matter when I start out like talking to people.
No, in the beginning, it doesn't matter. But you will just little by little, you will start picking it up, you know. Mm-hmm. Like reading body language, it's hard to. Definitely when you read a book about body language, it will help. But it's something that, you know, you will get it more through experience. You know, you can read how to ride a bicycle, but until you don't get in the bicycle, you know exactly how to do it, you know? So it's just that you will just natively get this when you just start talking to people and you see how they react to you. And, you know, if somebody's looking at you and talking to you and their body is facing you, you know, usually means they want to talk to you. If somebody's body is facing away from you and they only turn their head to you, but not the rest of the body, usually means they don't want to be in that situation. Often that happens. It's just an example, but there are a million examples of that, you know?
Okay. Yeah. I'll try.
Well, cool. I think that's a good place to leave off. Unless anyone has maybe time for one last question.
Yeah, real quick. Gustavo, you were asked why didn't you go to like say go Lanta or go Samoa. Part of the reason why I'm going to these cities that I do on the trip on this year is to meet talented people since I'm wanting to build a team for my startup. I have a software engineering background, but you know, a marketing or other tech talent designers, that would be great. So what do you think are good locations in the world to meet that sort of people? Obviously I can say Silicon Valley, but that's expensive, right? So
that's a good point. Well, I know there's a big tech community in Bangkok, so where you are right now, it's a good place. If you want value and if you want something cheap, I know one of the guys that I'm working with, he's right now in Chiang Mai, and you mentioned that place. It's very cheap. I know there's quite a tech community. But of course, like you said, Silicon Valley is very expensive. But if you always, there's no place like Silicon Valley in the sense that you will go to a bar in Silicon Valley and every person in that bar is working for a tech company. That just doesn't exist in the rest of the world. But to be honest, I don't like it when it's so extreme because last time I was in San Francisco, I walked into a bar. First guy I talked to, he worked for Google. Next person I talked to, he worked for Facebook. You know, third person I talked to, he worked for Apple. It was like a stereotypical San Francisco bar, which is cool if you're only wanting to work. But then you realize the only thing that happens in this whole city is just tech, you know, and at some point you just get sick of it. So if you want to have a good balance, I think you're in a nice place. Definitely. Thailand is a good place for that. And Phuket, definitely not that many tech people, for sure. I know that Bali is a very good place as well. I'm not a big fan of Bali, but there's definitely a lot of, like, you know, digital nomads there.
Okay. Yeah, what you said about the Valley matches my sentiment, too. And it's not even that friendly. So, but a point taken on Bali. Thanks for the input.
Yeah, Bali is very, very popular. There's so many, you know, there are even co-working spaces there. I know you can go to Canggu, is very popular now for tech guys who are digital nomads and they want to do freelance work from there and so on. I have a few friends who are in Bali right now.
Okay.
Well, cool, guys. Thanks so much for coming on. Gustavo, you know, awesome interview.
Thanks for listening. If you want more, go to innerconfidence.com. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast for the latest episodes.